This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, here we go again. This is the Western Rookie Podcast. My name's Dan Johnson. I'm your host. And today I want to talk a little bit about my experience hunting mule deer in plain type environments like your grasslands, your South Dakota, your Nebraska, your Eastern Montana, your Eastern Wyoming, your Eastern Colorado. These types of environments will also could work in Western North Dakota, Western Kansas, any place where there's big prairie, wide open type of environments where mule deer live. These are my experience. Now, I'm going to throw that asterisk out here. I've gotten close to good deer out there. I am by no means an expert at this. This is my experience. And so please take what I say with a grain of salt. We've had other experts on this show who have way more experience than me. And if you want to get in on that, you go listen to one of those episodes. However, I think I do have maybe not necessarily killing the actual animal, but a lot of other things that I can bring to the table in today's episode that will help you understand what it's like, especially if you're going out for your first, second, third, or even 10th trip and you haven't found success yet. I absolutely love, and I mean love, the prairie. I don't know what it is about the plain states where you can get to a point and basically see forever. And there's something about that that makes that's almost nostalgic from a history standpoint. Like covered wagons went through this property on Western expansion, you know, or some crazy stuff like that. And being able to see a mule deer buck just materialize out of nowhere, like where was he at? How did he get there? What's his pattern and things like that? And so I definitely want to talk about that today and share my experiences with you. And like I said, take what you can away from this conversation. It's just me today. And hopefully it gives you at least something to think about for an upcoming mule deer hunt. All right. Before I do that, though, I want to send a huge shout out to the partners of the Western Rookie Podcast. First is Vortex Optics. I know when I go out west, optics are huge. They're a necessity. There are times when I bring my spotting scope with me. There are times when I leave it in the truck, where I throw it up in the bed and I'm trying to glass from a road, things like that. But I always have my binoculars on me. This year, I kind of upgraded to a range finding binocular that Vortex offers. So go check that out along with all their other products at vortexoptics.com. Next on the list is Wasp Archery. Wasp, in my opinion, makes some of the best broadheads on the market. These guys are, I mean, some of the best design. And what I like about this company is they're not trying to keep up with industry standards by coming out with a new broadhead, the latest and greatest broadhead every year. They have a set of broadheads that they manufacture and that they sell. And guess what? They work. Whenever my Wasp broadhead hits an animal, there is a ton of destruction that happens along with it. And that's because of its design. That's because of the material that it's used. And most of their heads are still manufactured in the United States. So go check out wasparchery.com. I have a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. And then next on the list, if you're looking, when we talk about getting inside of the kill belt bubble, whether that's for elk, antelope, mule deer, or any other species, you can take a look at Montana Decoy. These guys are putting out lightweight, very detailed graphics on fabric type of material. It's packable, so you can crunch it down, put it in your pack, take it with you, and it's going to help you get in that kill bubble and a deer may come your way. Or maybe it just gives you that second or two you need to draw your bow back or set your rifle up and before you pull the trigger and get the job done. So go check out MontanaDecoy.com for all of their decoy lineups. All right. First off, thank you guys very much for tuning in. I really appreciate this. And I look at the analytics about once a month, and I see that we're trending up, which is cool. So first off, thank you. If you could go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you download this, and give us a 5-star review, maybe make some comments, let everybody know how badass of a podcast this is, and spread the word. All right. Here's my experience, what I would call hunting prairie mule deer, grassland mule deer, maybe even a little bit. I'm not going to say river bottom mule deer, because when I think of river bottom mule deer, I think of like highly managed, like farms where nobody hunts and they're almost like tame type of mule deer. This is not that environment. All of this, what I'm about to say, is on public land, minus about 3 days of hunting where I got access to a private piece. With that said, here's my experience for spot and stalk bow hunting mule deer. Some of this is going to be able to transfer over to a rifle hunt as well, depending on what time of year you go, maybe muzzleloader. All right. So, all summer long, we do the e-scouting, right? We're looking at, you know, we find out what unit we're going to be in or what area of the state we're going to be in. And we start doing our e-scouting. We're looking for public. We're looking for access. We're looking for water. We're looking for roads that cross, BLM, grassland, you know, walk-in. We hunt some walk-in as well. And so we're looking at a lot of those things leading up to the season. Now, I'm going to fast forward a bit because that's what we've done. When we get there, here's where we have kind of established, I don't know what you would call it, is like a routine, or it's scheduled for us. Like day one and two, when we get out there, we are doing cattle checks. Because, and I'm not going to sit here and say that cattle and mule deer don't mix, but from my experience, I'm going to tell you that cattle and mule deer do not mix. And so the first thing that we do, and sometimes that means we got to take a long walk in the morning and get to specific spots. I'm going to tell you that our experience in this public land walk-in environment is that if cattle are in a pasture that we've hunted previous and we go and check it out and they're in there, we are not hunting that. We're not going to be putting too much attention to those places. We may give it a morning. We may give it an evening. We may give it a very quick walkthrough, one over, almost to the point where we're trying to bump mule deer and see if there's anything in there. But our experience has told us that once we find cattle, we are better hunting somewhere else. We have a better chance hunting somewhere else. Cattle are water hogs. They're gonna take over the water source. They're gonna find the best shade in the afternoons when it gets warm, and so they're gonna be bumping mule deer out of that pasture or that area. Now, with that said, the way the fencing structure is in some of these states is wild to me, right? Fencing doesn't mean property lines. Fencing doesn't mean public or private. Sometimes it could be like right in the middle. So you got to be on point with your digital mapping in order to find this stuff out. But they could be one little ridge over or one little property line over. And if you can find that, then, you know, they've been pushed out of an area where you've been in the past. Now, you got to figure out where they're at this year. And so sometimes they're on a piece of public or walk in on right right next to this pasture. Other times, they're not. And other times, that those mule deer will be on, they'll get bumped to private. And my experiences at this point says that's a no-go, especially if it's owned by a cattle company or an LLC or something like that. They're not letting anybody hunt. If they do, it's through an outfitter or guide service, and you're not getting access to that anyway. So cattle check, cattle rotation, and we do our due diligence, right? We don't just pull up. There are places where we pull up and go, if they're here, there's no mule deer. Right. And we can do that from a road. We can, you know, just walk to a fence, drop down and take a look. Nothing in there. And we're good to go. Cattle checks. Then we just go find spot A, you know, B, C, D, E, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And we just keep going and checking down the line until we find where cattle are not. And sometimes you have to walk through cattle to get to the back side of this pasture or this public piece in order to cross another fence or find another corner that these mule deer are living in. And so don't give up too soon, but also know that there's a very good chance that your experience hunting in cattle is not going to be as good. So that's just me. We're not wasting time hunting in cattle. All right. So we got that. While we're doing that, there are some times where maybe we don't find cattle, and then we also don't find water. Water is, how do I put this? It's weird because I'll watch a mule deer stand up and start feeding, or in the mornings they're feeding back to their beds. I don't know if I've ever seen a mule deer take a drink of water. And they've obviously designed them. They're like, they've evolved to be able to probably get moisture from the plants that they're eating. I'm sure they drink at some point throughout the night, but it's not like I've ever seen a herd of mule deer go to a river or go to a creek or go to a cattle tank and just sit there and gulp water. I have not seen that. And so I do a water check while I'm doing my cattle check to see what's in there. If there's water in there and there's no cattle, there's probably going to be mule deer in there somewhere. Now, you have to still go and find them. That doesn't necessarily mean they're close, because these deer are traveling long distances. You know, I think they're going to probably find bedding first, then they're going to try and find after bedding, then they'll find food in their water. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the middle of the night these mule deer are, I don't know, finding water in a cattle tank or a little hole in a creek that has stopped flowing and things like that, because there's a lot of times out there, excuse me, it's really dry. It's really dry, and these things are still surviving out there. So water for me is important, but it's also not like, it's not a deal breaker for me, because they could, and I'll give you an example here. We have found a drainage where we have to go through cattle some years to get up top and cross a fence and get to a back drainage. And this drainage leads up to a pond that is on a private piece. Okay. And so we don't get to see them drink, but I know that's where they're going. There's like a cattle pond. So they're up there drinking, and then they cross the fence and they come back into this drainage to bed because it has the most, cover, right? The nooks and the crannies and the deep cracks that these deer are kind of bumping into in order to get there for the day. So if you didn't have that digital map to look at and put the pieces of the puzzle together, you would have thought, hey, there's no water right here. But these deer are traveling for water, they're traveling for food, and then they graze their way back to bed and they graze their way out. So I do my water checks, right? All right, guys, you know me, and I love eating wild game. But I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef. and that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan & Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
Now, this has been an issue that I have run into over the years, okay? There's the saying, don't leave deer to find deer. That's fine. It depends on what your goal is. If your goal is a buck and you're glassing doe herds all day long, you might want to try a different spot where there's bucks and you're going to have to go find those. There, one thing about hunting mule deer is there's days where I'll sit on a knob and I will see 50, you know, I could count from drainage to drainage where I'm glassing at, and I'm counting 50, 60 mule deer does, no bucks. What do we do at this point? And this is where I kind of sometimes break my don't leave deer to find deer rule. This will lead into the next little conversation that I have here, the next bullet point, that if your goal is a buck, you got to go find bucks, right? At the end of the week, if I'm willing, hey, you know what? I'm going to go shoot a doe, or if my unit allows me to shoot a doe with the tag that I have, well, then I'm going to go leave all those does to try to find a buck. And sometimes they're real hard to find, especially when I go in early October in the rut. They just herd up a little bit more. Late season, they herd up a little bit more. And as you start to get later in the season, the thing that I have found out, more eyes means more problems. And just because you think there's one deer there, there's probably not. You're going to bump something trying to put a stalk on, and it's gonna backfire for you, especially if you're new. I wish I had an actual count. I bet you it would be hilarious if I had a number, like someone was able to calculate the actual number of deer that I have blown out that were not the deer that I was putting a stalk on. So think about that. Don't leave deer to find deer. At least you know where those does are. So at the end of the week, you can go, well, I'm just going to settle for a doe. You can go find those spots again. But if you want a buck, you got to go find a buck. And that means that you're probably going to have to move around a little bit. Okay. Let's start this process. I've done the cattle check. There's no cattle. Ooh, there's decent water and food in this area. Okay, cool. Now, oh, I see some deer in here. They go back to, you know, it's a morning. I get there before the sun comes up. I'm sitting on a big knob. I'm glassing. I'm watching the deer maybe move through the area. Maybe there's a buck. Maybe there's not. But there's definitely no cattle. All right. So now I am glass checking nooks and crannies. All right. So they all go bed down. It starts to warm up a little bit. And I'm trying to sit here and figure out what, you know, throughout an entire drainage, I'm glass checking. So that means I'm walking the ridges, probably not on the top to skyline myself, but I'm slowly creeping up on the opposite side of the ridges, and I'm either glassing down into my same side, or I'm slowly glassing across the valley or across a drainage and looking down into the either the very bottom where maybe a dry creek bed cuts into a hill and they're in the shade. I'm looking for places where there's potential shade all day long, which it could potentially be hard to find. But I'm telling you, if there is a, for example, we're in North America, so if there is a south or a north slope that has something cut into it, pretty deep to where these deer can get in there and start, these deer can get in there and really start disappearing. I'm telling you right now, man, it will be, you'll find deer in those spots. And maybe it's not a buck, but it could potentially be some does, which could lead you to something else. So, keep an eye out for that. Taller grass, means that that area has had a little bit more water in there. And if there's taller grass, that means they can, you know, creep down into that. And that's something that's really hard to check, is a whole bunch of shrubs and bushes and tall grass, because they can just disappear in that. And that's why it's important to be there in the deer movement times of day, early in the morning, late at night. And sometimes if it's warm out, these deer, they may not even stand up and come out of that stuff until very close to dark. And that would be in your October timeframe, your September, October timeframe. More than likely, there's going to be a couple bucks hanging out with each other. And I'm not talking about age class at all, because that's a completely different story of what the big mature bucks are doing. But there might be two or three bucks in a little group, and then you find them, and then maybe you put a play on them or whatever the case is, or you document that, and then you're there the next morning on the opposite side, hoping that they didn't catch you come back to ambush them coming back to the bed the next morning. So very something to think about there. Okay, let's see. Glass check every nook and cranny. So I'm doing that on both sides of the drainage. So if let's say there's a mile long drainage, I had to walk a half a mile or a mile to get into the spot where I start glassing a parallel with, like, I'm at the point and I'm trying to get as much information as I can from the highest point in that drainage. Then I take a giant loop around the drainage, as far as I can go, whether that's a property line or a fence or wherever the public or the walk-in ends. I follow that drainage, I'm following the terrain, and I'm glassing every nook and cranny, and I document. And in the past, I found some decent deer to go after, and then you put a play together. All right, so I caught him, he's bedded, I see some antler tips, I see an ear. In the shade, sometimes it can be very difficult because of the contrast, especially if the sun is shining real hard in your face. And it takes a couple years to know what you're looking for, as far as like a mule deer head or a body or how the sun reflects off their tail. When they're standing up on their feet and they have their giant white ass facing towards you, that's easy to locate. But when they're bedded down, you really do have to pick apart the shade to try to find some type of thing that looks like a mule deer. And I'm going to be honest with you, I've put a plan together on something that I thought was a mule deer buck, but ended up being a bush or a branch or something like that. And so long story short, I put a stalk on an empty drainage. And that's kind of embarrassing and heartbreaking when you walk up to it and you're like, are you kidding me? I just did a 2-hour stalk on a branch, and then you kick the dirt and you turn around and you start walking back. Anyway, those types of things. So I'm glass checking down. I'm glass checking back. I'm looking. I'm trying to be in those areas when deer are on their feet early morning and late afternoon. And depending on what time of day or year it is, you know, the closer you get to the rut, I'm assuming the cooler the temps will be in the evenings and they'll be up on their feet earlier. And time of year. And I always go early. So it's, there's days now where I'm doing a lot of walking. And then I'll be honest with you, if I know there's deer in there, there's days where I'm just going back to my truck. I know guys who just, they're out there all day long. They scrub. They're out there looking at every drainage. They're out there looking at every single, multiple ridges, and they're just walking and doing stuff all day long. With limited amount of time that I have out there, I don't want to blow a doe herd or a deer out of the area that I know that they're in. And so I'm just using my glass a lot. And so I'm not afraid to sit on a drainage or a, and I know this might not be an aggressive tactic. It's more calm, but I'm aggressive when I find them. Then I'm going in on them hard. You know, if there's something that I want to shoot, I'm going in on it hard. However, there's times where I know it's a good area because I've seen deer here before. I've done my cattle check. They're not there. And so now I just have to wait. And I'm there in the morning and I'm there again in the afternoon. And I'm just trying to, you know, I'm trying to find the best route I'm trying to find the best route that they're taking and intercept them, whether that's they're coming to their bed, they're leaving their bed, or they're in their bed. So think about that. Okay. And so the other thing is, you know, I told you I glass check. I do a lot of glass checking. I'll walk. If I know there's deer in a drainage and I know they're in there because I've seen them, I'm not doing that on really tight, narrow drainages. On bigger drainages where they might even see you. Let's say you're walking a drainage, maybe you're even skylined, whatever the case is, and you put your binos up and you see them across the drainage and they are staring right at you, but you're too far away for them to get up and run. You know, those are still potentially stalkable deer. So you don't stop and you don't walk right at them. You just leave the area like you came in, you just leave it. And then you document it. And then you can maybe loop around and get them while they're still bedded, or you know where they're at for the next morning. But that doesn't always mean that they're there the next morning. They could be in the next drainage over or on a different property by then. So, I don't necessarily disturb tight drainages. And that would be my description of a tight drainage would be something that drops off real quick down to a single little cut. And those tight drainages may be deep in there, and then they can crawl in there and potentially bed down in some tall grass or an embankment that's been washed away, or a little crack in there. And if I see him go in, then that I just wait until I see something that I want to shoot in there, and then I'll make my play on him. I may try to sneak around, but if the terrain doesn't allow me to be hidden on these tight drainages, if they see me, it's probably going to be too close. So I either go way, way down and try to get a different angle and let my glass do the work for me, but I'm not stomping in these tight little drainages blowing deer out, because I haven't figured out a pattern like whitetails for mule deer yet, or what they do, or how many days they do the same thing in a row. Maybe if the food source is there and the water's there, they're doing the same thing multiple days in a row. I haven't seen that per se. Sometimes a big deer will be in there. Sometimes it won't. Sometimes the doe herd will be in there. Sometimes it won't. And so I'm not necessarily sure I'm the right guy to talk to about mule deer patterning or anything like that. I just know that I get pissed at myself when I blow a drainage out, and the next time I come back if I came back the next day, more than likely they're not there. So I don't really disturb tight drainages. Bigger drainages, I'll glass, I'll walk the tops, I'll try to get down into all of that stuff. But tight drainages, I'll be a little bit more patient, especially if there's deer in there. All right. So we're checking in, we're moving. We're checking in, we're moving, we're being mobile. We're finding where the deer are, where they're not, any other, you know, are there other hunters in there? And all of this gets documented in my brain. And I'll say this. I used to get upset at seeing another truck in there. And this is going to sound horrible, but I've started to assume that I know more about the areas. I know where the mule deer are than the other hunters that are there. And that's maybe that's a bad assumption to have, but one I can remember, I'm sitting, it's one of my first 2 years and it was kind of eye opening for me. I'm sitting on this huge knob and I can see miles of this drainage. This one, it's a huge drainage. And I watched a truck pull up to the parking lot. I was also watching a literal herd of bucks come off of this top and then come down in and start to find places to bed. Okay. The hunters would walk into a certain point. They'd turn around and they'd walk back. Certain point, turn around, walk back. And this happened like 3 times. I watch in the same morning, a truck would pull up, they'd scrub, turn around, come, they'd walk back. And it was probably a 1 mile walk that they'd walk in about a mile, turn around, walk back. And guess where all the mule deer were? They were one drainage over. So I started putting myself in positions where I could see not necessarily people coming in and out, because that's difficult, but I would always say, okay, I'm assuming this is where the normal person would stop. Then I go one more drainage over, two more drainage over, or I get to a position where I can see with my glasses more than what that average hunter would go. So it's almost like I'm competing with them a little bit for how much ground I'm covering or how much, a better glassing point per se. So that was really eye-opening for me, where it's just because you don't see deer doesn't mean that there's not deer there. And so that might go against everything that I've just said, with cattle or with how you scrub or, you know when to leave or know when to stay on a specific property. But yeah, man, just keep checking and you keep moving. Now, one thing I will say is if I give a property a morning, an afternoon, I check wind direction, I go back, and maybe there's a wind shift and I'll go check the property from a different angle. Maybe there's two access points or maybe there's one access point, but I'll walk a fence line all the way down and in the next morning glass it from a different angle to see like what's there. If I don't see anything in two days of giving it 2 days, I'll probably pocket that spot and maybe come visit it 2 days later, or if I can't find anything. But once I find something, then I'm going to continue to move in on it until I either blow it out or I have a bad stock and the buck jumps over and goes somewhere else. So and this is where I've talked about this a little bit, and that is, what do you do midday? If you see deer, you just keep going until the entire valley or the entire drainage is scrubbed. But there's a lot of times where I'm just chilling in my truck. And I know that doesn't sound efficient, but when it's warm out, there's times where I feel, especially if the drainage is tight, you're going to do way more harm than good. But you learn for the next year, right? You may blow a drainage out. It just depends on what you're looking for and what you want. Are you comfortable with going into some of these spots and blowing a deer completely out? Are you, and then saying, I'm going to chalk it up for next year. You know, you drop your pin and you go. I know some dudes, and I've tried this before, where the wind is blowing down the drainage, right? You're at the bottom and you're going to try to creep your way up. And that's all they do all day long is they try to sound bump bucks. Maybe they glassed them going in, or they're going in blind. They're going to sound bump. So they just keep walking up, draw their bow. You know, they one pops up, and what happens is they're not like a whitetail. Whitetail will get up and run. They'll bound up and then stop and take a look at you to verify what you are. And so they're creeping just step by step by step. And then you draw your, you just basically have your arrow knocked on these stalks, and then you sound bump them. They stand up, look back at you, boop, go. Other guys I've talked to where there'll be a two of them. One guy at the top, one guy at the bottom. The guy at the bottom will be set up. The guy at the top literally scent bumps, just walks and sits and lets his scent go down into the drainage. And it's difficult to do because they can explode out anywhere. But I've heard of guys that are, one guy's kind of creeping his way up. Another guy scent bumps down. They stand up and maybe they try to hide in the drainage and try to leave, and they get them that way as well. There's a lot of ways to skin a cat, but there's that what I've just kind of talked about is how I approach this. Now, what I would love is if somebody reached out to me and gave me some kind of, I don't know, advice, because I'm still a Western rookie. That's why I still do this. I like, just when I think I know something about a mule deer or an elk or an antelope, they prove me wrong and they make me look real bad. And it's embarrassing. Especially when you're out there getting caught with your pants down. And, one of my favorites is you see a buck, you go and you put a stalk on him, and then you maybe turn around and you look, and out there in the prairie, if you can look in one direction and you can think one thing, but then you see that terrain from the complete opposite side, there's little cracks and little hiding spots, and you have seven does on their feet looking at you that you didn't know were there. And then they run out, they bump the buck, and you're 4 miles away from your truck. And you're like, fuck. Like, it's so, that spot and stalk game is so hard. But I will say this, on the buck that I did kill, it was one of the most rewarding hunts that I've ever been on. And so spotting a stalk, killing an animal either on their feet, and you kind of have the terrain to your advantage, or you're trying to catch them in a bed. Oh man, dude, there's nothing better than that. So take what I've said, maybe implement it on your Western adventures that are coming up here in the next, handful of, we're looking at some states with, from a September 1st opener, you're looking at a month to get out there. And I don't even have my arrows ready yet for this upcoming year. So I'm not going on a Western hunt this year. Next year I'll be picking it back up and going again, but I'm really looking forward to hearing all your stories. Oh, I forgot a bullet point. Okay. I have only seen a buck bed switch one time. I've only captured it with my own eyes. Now, this doesn't mean that they're not doing that. It just means that I've only seen I was on a big drainage and I was across and I located a buck who was bedded and I watched him. And about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, he stood up, he stayed on that military crest, and he went down into another area with shade that was already shaded, and he sat down right on top of it. Now, I've only seen that once. I have not seen a ton of bed switching or have been in an area where deer are moving great distances in the middle of the day. I have seen them maybe stand up and then rotate their body a little bit, but it's in the same drainage in the same general area. Maybe they're on one side of the bush or tree on during one, and then they rotate around and they sit in the on the same tree in the other, you know, when the sun's on the other side. So other than that, that's all I had to say. So be safe out there. Have fun. Gain as much knowledge. Don't be afraid to talk to landowners out there. Some of them may not give you the time of day, but if you can catch one on the right day, I've had experiences where you catch them coming out of the tractor, you start to talk to them just for a moment, and they don't let you hunt their property, but they let you walk through their property to maybe landlocked public or some type of hard to get to back door walk in or public that you can't access from the other side, or you can access, but you got to come through the whole place to get to the back. So take that into consideration as well. So good vibes, everybody. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day to listen to me talk about my mule deer hunting experiences. Good luck out there. Send me pics, send me comments, email me at ninefingerchronicles@gmail.com, whatever you want, and give some advice. If you have enough advice or enough experience, whether it's successful, what to do, and almost more importantly, what not to do, reach out to me. And I'd love to get you on the Western Rookie Podcast to talk about your experiences and share those with others. So good vibes, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.